You're listening to the We Are Libertarians Podcast Network. Find all of our shows at wearelibertarians.com.
Hi, I'm George Siegel, and I'd like to invite you to listen to my podcast called Tell Us How to Make It Better. I think we can all agree there are a lot of problems in the world. You probably know people who like to complain about them. On my podcast, I like to introduce you to people who are actually trying to make those problems better. My guests range from a DIY queen who shows you how to do projects around the house, to a woman who has created an app to help keep your family safe. We've done shows on repurposing trees, to the dangers of binge drinking among teens, to finding solutions to the challenges of climate change. I love people who are trying to solve problems, and I hope you'll join me each week to hear their stories on the Tell Us How to Make It Better podcast.
You're listening to the We Are Libertarians Podcast Network. Find all of our shows at wearelibertarians.com. Welcome to the Chris Spangle Show. Thank you so much for joining me. We really appreciate you being here with us. Before we start, we always like to thank all the members of Wall Plus. They're the reason that the show and the network exist. And you can learn about all the great benefits of subscribing to our Patreon at joinwallplus.com. You'll get all kinds of bonus content, access to the complete archives of the show, ad-free episodes, and you'll be supporting common sense, nice libertarianism. And isn't that what the world needs? Thank you especially to our $100 a month members, John Pasilo, Vincent Peichel, Lars Nordskog, Jake Edel, Matthew Durbin, Reinhold, Christy Avery, and Jason Doolittle. We also want to thank our main sponsor, Iconic Insurance. Man, it's hard to find good insurance, especially if you're self-employed, and my buddy Matt Allen over at Iconic Insurance does a great job. He doesn't want to make money. He just wants to help you get good insurance. So check him out at iconic-insurance.com/libertarians. Well, today we are talking about educational choice. Education choice, I don't know how you say it. I'll ask the expert that we're talking to. Long time, important subject to me, and I am glad to welcome Cooper Conway, who is a National Voices Fellow at 50 Can and a contributor at Young Voices, where he focuses on education reform. And we're going to be talking about Carson v. Mencken, the latest school choice case heard at the Supreme Court in the United States. Cooper Conway, thank you so much for joining me. I really appreciate you being here.
Well, Chris, thank you so much for having me. I'm excited to be here.
Yes, it is always nice to talk to you young kids that make me feel old, and the pre-interview is, you're just where I was 20 years ago, just bright-eyed, bushy-tailed. It's nice to see. I appreciate your energy. And how did you get into commentary? Tell us a little bit about yourself before we start talking about education choice.
Well, I started with education choice, really being able to experience education freedom myself. My parents had the opportunity to move into a nicer neighborhood with a nicer public school growing up, so we did that right away. And then my dad is also a teacher, so he started teaching at a private school where I was able to receive a scholarship and have access to a great private Christian education growing up from second grade through graduating high school. And I think it's one of the reasons I was able to graduate college recently, and I'm headed to grad school as well to Pepperdine, and I attribute a lot of my success to that opportunity and educational freedom. And I just want every child to be able to experience educational freedom now.
How did your libertarianism form? Were you born into it? It's weird to start talking to people who are born into libertarianism because their parents heard about it from Ron Paul. But, you know, how did you end up a free market guy?
Well, I really did not start off as a free market guy at all. As I mentioned to you earlier before the show started, I'm from Portland, Oregon. Free markets is not exactly something that we champion out here. But in between my freshman and sophomore years of college, I went to go work at a small nonprofit in inner city Baltimore. And I realized that a lot of the problems that these people were facing were because of the government and not having opportunity. And after that, I ended up interning at the Heritage Foundation, and kind of a weird story. And then I did a lot of the beginning of my work in educational freedom at the Cascade Policy Institute in Portland, which is a free market think tank, at the beginning of COVID when schools were shutting down. And this was when Oregon's governor stepped in and said that, well, we're not going to have any public schools be open. And so a bunch of families went to go move to online charter schools that already had the infrastructure in place to be able to teach their students. And then the governor stepped in and said, well, we're going to have a cap at that too. So parents were really just stuck without any great educational opportunities for their children while public schools were scrambling to set up something or anything to help these families. And it just took a lot longer than it should have, while teachers unions really just dominated the political landscape and blocked educational freedom from happening in Oregon.
Well, everywhere. I mean, you know, think about teachers unions trying to keep schools shut down in places like Chicago and the black eye that they got for that, and even the most bluest of states and cities. I've said for the 10 years that I've done this show, the internet has revolutionized every industry with the exception of government and education. And the pandemic was really the reckoning for those two industries. And you see the declining rates of enrollment happening across the country at schools as people start to kind of walk away and maybe do something a little bit different. And one of, I mean, education choice is not new. Milton Friedman, obviously. We have the Friedman Foundation here in Indianapolis, and we're big fans of them over there. His book, Free to Choose, is a foundational document on educational choice. But it still continues to be contentious, even when you look at cities like Indianapolis that have a thriving private and public and charter school environment, lots of educational choice here. Teachers unions still continue to fight it, and it ended up in the Supreme Court with Carson v. Mencken. Can you talk a little bit about Carson v. Mencken, this Supreme Court case that was just decided?
Yeah, so Carson v. Mencken was a case that came out of Maine. And so for those who don't know this, Maine is actually the most rural state in the country based off of its population. You'd think it'd be Alaska, but a lot of Alaska's population is in Anchorage, while Maine's is kind of spread out throughout the state. And so what this means is that a lot of the local school districts in Maine don't have the population needed to support an elementary or a middle or a high school. And so Maine's had a long-standing town tuitioning program that would allow parents to be able to take the taxpayer dollars meant to be used for their child's education and allow them to use it at other public schools or private schools as well. And then in 1980, Maine's attorney general kind of stepped in and said, well, you can use it at private religious schools, but there just can't be any sort of religious use, whatever that means. In terms of a religious school not being able to teach religion seems like something that's not going to be very popular. And these parents kind of stepped up and said, this doesn't make any sense at all. I'm the one making the choice of where I want my child to be able to go to the school. And the Supreme Court affirmed this in a 6-3 vote, and they backed up their previous ruling in Espinoza as well, basically saying that if you're going to have a private school choice program, these parents need to be able to access any private school, whether it's a religious private school or not.
Yeah. So, I mean, was it simply just that people didn't want public money going to private schools?
Yeah, that's pretty much the case all across the country here, as we mentioned with the teachers unions, is that they don't want this taxpayer dollars to be able to leave this monopoly that is the government education system, because there's not unionized teachers at these private schools. And then parents have more access to see, well, maybe the public traditional public school system isn't the school that's best serving my child.
And this has kind of been a longstanding fight. You know, we don't want, if you take public money, then you can't do certain things. But I feel like we're at a point in the culture war, Cooper Conway is my guest, where it sort of like used to feel like there was secular and then there was religious. And now it feels like left versus right schools almost. There's been a shift, I think, especially in the last 5 years, where people are sort of starting to sort themselves into, well, I want my school to be very pro-LGBT, and I want my school to be, you know, pro-Catholic. Like, culture seems to be, like, seeping into this a lot more. Are you seeing that in the education reform discussion?
Yeah, without a doubt. Parents, over the past year and a half, 2.5 years of the pandemic, have seen really for the first time, it almost appears that like, oh, some of the stuff that my children are being exposed to, I don't really want them exposed to that. Or there's certain beliefs that they just don't agree with, whether it's from the left or the right. And really what should be happening here is school choice should be used as the solution. And having parents be able to say, well, I want them to be able to go to my private religious Catholic school, or there's other private schools that are more LGBTQ affirming, for example. And so it really kind of eases the tensions in the education sector throughout the country and plenty of these schools, because there's tons of different private school options that are available. And there's just new options that are being made available each and every day for whatever educational environment works best for the student, instead of kind of this one size fits all approach that we've been going with for the past few decades.
I mean, you don't have to answer this because I know you're coming at it from more of a journalistic standpoint, but I don't know, I'm asking more of the listener maybe, like, I just don't know how healthy that is for society. I mean, part of the benefit of public schooling over the last 150 years is the mixing and integration of all these different cultures and a better awareness. And I wonder, you know, if giving up on that liberal, classically liberal, you know, multicultural viewpoint is healthy, and where we, you know, I mean, Cooper, if we start sorting ourselves into these ideological schools, well, we've got Harvard over here, and conservatives have done this for a long time. Like, we've got Hillsdale because, well, they kicked us out of Harvard, we got to make Hillsdale. They kicked us out of the New York Times, so we've got to have the National Review. But I don't know that we're better off for some of that. So do you want to comment on that?
Yeah, I would be happy to comment on that. I don't think that's necessarily, and hopefully that will never be the case, where it's really just everyone siloed off into their own certain ideological beliefs. For example, As I mentioned, I went to the private Christian school in my neighborhood, or that was close to my neighborhood. This private Christian school accepted people of all different faiths. I know we had kids that were Mormon, kids that were more secular or agnostic and atheist. And we were able to still be kind of exposed to not just the Christian values that the school did and have influenced in their curriculum. But I think that is kind of a larger question at hand here, is how are we going to move forward, create a country that is understanding and that is able to accept everyone's values? And I think school choice is one area where we can say, hey, I can understand that a parent wants their child to be educated in this way. I just would prefer for my child to be educated in this way as well. And we can be tolerant of that.
This seems to be a newer discussion, because 10 years ago it was, well, these schools are failing. And, you know, Manual High School is an inner city school here. And the first 2 weeks of the school, they have buses rounding kids up because their funding is determined on how many enrollments they have in the first 2 weeks. And then they kind of give up on truancy after that, but nobody really wanted to send their kid to a school like Manual because it was 30% of the kids were actually graduating. Is that more the emphasis in the education reform movement, or is it more of these cultural conversations?
That's a great question. Honestly, I would say it depends who you're talking to, and there is more cultural conversations that are being brought up. However, the failing public schools is something that I think that needs to still continue to be focused on, is that we are not defunding public education. Funds from 2002 to 2019 have increased by nearly $3,000 per child. It's just that these funds aren't actually ever reaching the student. And education savings accounts, say the one that we saw in Arizona, which was universally expanded so that every student has access to their taxpayer education dollars to be used however they see fit, can really be used as a way to, instead of subsidizing kind of this broken system, subsidize the student and the parents who know their student better than anybody else. And that has been shown to increase test scores for students that are able to access private educational choice programs. But also, it has also improved public school students who stay in these public schools after the private school choice programs are implemented. Because as we know, competition makes people more efficient and want to step up their game. And these public schools, for the first time, now have somebody that's competing for their dollars that used to just flow to them no matter what.
Yeah, the scare tactics are always teachers, you're going to miss out. And then in Indiana, anytime there's any kind of school choice legislation, there's an army of teachers protesting. Teachers seem to be really touchy because they get worked up by the teachers' unions. But what would you say to a teacher about the benefits of the of education choice, and specifically, and maybe we should define, you know, the, what is it, the ESA, the education savings account, and how the money follows the student, you know, how that benefits students and teachers, I mean.
Yeah, I'll start with the education savings account. So your listeners may be familiar with a voucher. A voucher is really just taking the lump sum of that's being used for the student in the public schools and allowing the parents to have access to that to be able to pay for a seat in a private school, which is a great educational choice option. Education savings account kind of expands that, makes it more flexible, and personalizes it to the students to where they can still use it at a private school, but they can also use it for, say, special needs therapies, if they homeschooled online classes or curriculum, a bunch of different private educational options that really puts the student first. Now, how this helps the teacher is we've had these major increases in spending in our K-12 system, but teachers are right. Their salaries have not actually gone up. From 1992 to 2016, we spent an increase of 27% in our public education system, but teacher salaries got knocked down 2%. Instead, we're spending the money on different administrative salaries or other employees that are not actually teachers. So if we have more students being able to use, say, in Arizona, where they had about $7,000 a piece for these education savings accounts, say you have 10 students, you have $70,000 going into this micro school or this learning pod, these teachers are now empowered. There's no middleman, right? The teachers are able to access those funds themselves and able to give themselves a better salary and a less waste of money on other education expenses that don't actually affect what's being taught in the classroom and the students that are being affected by it.
So you don't actually want to ruin public schools. You don't actually want to destroy public schools and make children dumber.
No, completely not the case at all. In fact,
I don't know. That's what I heard on the internet. TikTok said so.
That is what TikTok says. However, educational choice should not ever be a threat to public schools the way that it's set up right now, if the public schools are doing a good enough job for students and their families. If the student and family feels like, oh, this public school works for me, they're not going to leave, right? They're never going to want to leave. It wouldn't make sense for them to do so. However, if they say, this public school isn't exactly fitting my needs, I need something else, then the public school is going to lose some of those funds and the student is going to be empowered to leave that school. And luckily, because this is now the case, these public schools are performing at higher levels to try and compete to keep these students.
All right. So tell me about what is happening in Michigan specifically. Yes. Let's kind of take this broader conversation and apply it to the state of Michigan and zero in on what is being discussed there. I first read your article in the Detroit Times, was it?
Detroit News.
Detroit News.
But yes. Michigan's very interesting. As we mentioned in the Carson B. Macon case, a lot of the anti-school choice kind of propaganda is going out. We're funding religious schools. And so many states have these provisions that says any public dollars cannot be used at any private religious school. And the Supreme Court has repeatedly struck this down, said that's not constitutional at all, because it's not. And then, but Michigan has a certain provision in their constitution that says, well, not only do we not allow any private religious schools to receive funds, we're not going to let any private schools at all. And so families in Michigan, where school choice is already extremely popular. So public school choice in Michigan, they have open enrollment, so access to other as many public schools as possible. And then there's quite a few charter schools. So there is school choice to a certain extent, but there's no private school choice. So families are now saying, well, I want to be able to have access to a private school using my taxpayer education dollars that my children is receiving in their public school. And it's just not legal. And so this has become kind of a constant battle between the legislature and then the governor has vetoed multiple private school choice bills. And I think that Michigan is going to be at the forefront of trying to break through for private educational choice for families moving forward.
Well, is there anything I'm missing that I should ask you before we move on to shameless self-promotion here? Like, should I ask you a question that I don't know about the topic? I'm not totally up on the educational choice movement like I used to be. What are some other exciting pieces of innovation that you look at and you go, wow, people really need to know about this?
I think I think for me, the most exciting part of the educational choice movement right now is what I call the silver lining of this pandemic, is that for a long time, students who were put into a position where they're in a bad education environment, were lower income families and kind of these consistently failing city urban schools that have not only failed them, but have failed their parents and their parents' parents for generations, right? But with COVID-19, wealthier families who are able to access public schools that have performed historically better were now affected. And parents realized, well, maybe the public school isn't going to be serving my child the best, and that there's other options out there. And so now there's really kind of this totality of parents who are saying, well, I want educational choice, no matter if I have access to the best public schools or the worst public schools. And you're seeing a lot of different parent groups step into the fight. And so while I could pump out an article a day, two articles a day, that's not going to make as much of an impact as five, you know, ticked off moms, is what I like to say, who are really trying to fight for their child and have more skin in the game than I do. And so that, I think, is exciting. And that's something where I think the parent voting block is going to become more important as time goes on. You already saw in Virginia with Governor Glenn Youngkin, his election was swayed largely because of parents. And you're seeing state legislators in Idaho and Iowa and Arizona really winning based off of the fact that they're campaigning as a pro-school choice candidate. And I think that's something that's going to be growing even more as the years go on.
All right, Cooper Conway, tell people where they can follow you and what will they see when they get there?
You can follow me on Twitter at CooperConway1. Usually I tweet out my latest articles. That's what I try and stick to. And then you can also see me on the Young Voices website with my headshot to see all of my different articles and media hits to learn more about school choice. So thank you.
All right. Thanks for being here, Cooper. Cooper Conway. You're going to listen. Just next time you come on, change your name. All right. Thanks for being here. Thank you, listeners, for joining us. Make sure you go and share this episode if you learned something, if you found it interesting. You've got a teacher in your life that's terrified of change. Please share that with them and let them know that we really do care about teachers. We care about students, those of us who believe in education choice. We're just trying to help you get more money and get more job opportunities at the end of the day. So please share with your friends if you learned something. It's the best way to support the program, and we will see you again soon. This podcast was produced and edited by Chris Spangle and Leaders and Legends LLC. If you're interested in starting a podcast or taking yours to the next level, please contact us at leadersandlegends.net.